Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Aleph and Aleph, but the two dots from Yehuda Omer, Bisrael Chodesh Echad. Gemara says, Hainu Tana Kamo. Because Rabbi Yehuda, it differentiates between Israel and a Kohen, but in his statement about the Israel, he is similar to the Tana Kamo. So in essence, the question is, why does he have to repeat the din with regards to Israel? He could have just been additive in saying what the din of the Kohen was and differentiating himself in that way. So Amar Abaye, Kohenet, Ata Leishminan, Enochanami. That's exactly what he's doing. He's just repeating in terms of the Israel what he said. He's coming to explain to us a Kohenet. The Kohenet here means a woman married to a Kohen. That's the instance where it makes a difference, and he's coming to explain to us that information. Abaye may also be saying that they really don't argue, that Rabbi Yehuda does not necessarily argue on the Tana Kamma, he's just giving us incremental information to the Tana Kamma. On the other hand, Rav Amar, Chodesh Malei v'Chodesh Chaser Ika Beinayu. There is a difference between them, between a month of 30 days and a month of 29 days. And that is because of the way that it's expressed in the Mishnah. In terms of the Mishnah, it says, Madir Tishto Melenotlo Ad Lamid Yom. So the Tana Kamma uses 30 days as his terminology. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bisrael Chodesh Echad. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda used the terminology Chodesh instead of Lamid Yom. And therefore, there's a differentiation between them, which is that the Tana Kamma always believes that it's 30 days, whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's Chodesh. Chodesh could be manifest in 29 days, or could be manifest in 30 days. Tosafot over here tries to establish principles with regards to the term Chodesh. How do you interpret the term Chodesh? And he differentiates between what he calls Chodesh Tikra, the psukim, and in the Torah, when they use the terminology chodesh, where it means 30 days. Whereas by the case of the Rabbanan, when the Rabbanan use it in the Gemara, that maybe the word chodesh there means 29 days, like it does in our instance over here, where chodesh refers to a chodesh chaser. But then he brings other proofs and other issues that don't seem to settle so much. And his final conclusion is, you gotta look at the context. And in the context, we would assume, which he says here, V'yesh lomar, that filu b'lishon d'rabbanan havei chodesh shloshim yom. That chodesh usually means 30 days, that's whether it's in the Oraita and the Psukim, whether that's d'rabbanan found in the Gemara. Areichad lo muchach, unless there's evidence to the contrary. Areichad lo muchach shani. But when there's cases where we have evidence from the context that it means something different, like in our case over here, then chodesh will mean 29 days, not just 30 days. So Amar Rav. Rav says with regards to our Mishnah, Lo Shanu Ela B'Mefarish. Our Mishnah is only true where he explicitly delineates the time period for which the neder will be outstanding. Ava B'Stam, if he makes the neder without any time limit on it, you'll see La Altar V'Yitain Ketubah. Then he divorces her immediately and gives her her Ketubah. So all that is being said in our Mishnah is not that we give him 30 days. It's rather if he took the neder for 30 days or less, then we let him work it out. If he took the neder for longer than that, then we don't let him work it out. On the other hand, if he just took a neder stam without any time limit on it, then we tell him to get divorced right away because it's not possible for him to continue in this manner. Shmuel Amar, afilu bistam. Shmuel says, even if he took a neder without any time delineation, lo yotzi, shema imtza petach lenidro. Because maybe he will find a way to unwind his neder. So Shmuel says that it has no bearing with the time frames that were given in the Mishnah, no bearing on the length of the neder. That's the amount of time we give you to rectify the situation or work out the possibility of undoing the neder. So the 30 days mentioned in the Mishnah is the window in which we give you time to deal with it. It's not the limit of the neder, it's the limit to which we give you to work out the situation. Now we did see this exact machloket back on Daf Samech Aleph, which is Vay Fligube Chada Zimno. Didn't they already argue about this issue with regards to Tashmisha Mita? The Tzana Madir Tishto Mi Tashmisha Mita. If he takes a neder with regards to Tashmisha Mita, Beit Shammai Omrim Shtei Shabbatot, then he stays around for 2 weeks. Beit Hillel Omrim Shabbat Echad, and Beit Hillel says for 1 week to work it out. For Amar Rav Machloket B'Mefaresh, their machloket is only when he explicitly delineates the time frame. Aval Bistam, if he doesn't give any time frame to it, you'll see La Altar V'Itain Ketubah. He divorces her immediately and gives her her Ketubah. Ushmuel Amar, Afilu Bistam Nami Lo Yotzi. Even if he does not give any time frame in the neder, he does not divorce her. Shemi Imtza Petach Lenidro. Maybe he will find a way to unwind the neder. Again, exactly the same machloket that we have in our Mishnah, they have on that Mishnah back on Samech Aleph. So what do we do? That Tzricha, we need both of them. Di'it mar bahahi, because if it was only stated over there, bahai kamar Rab, by the case of bi'at tashmish amita, that's where Rab says it, mishum delo efsher befarnas. There's no way to replace him and bring in a proxy to deal with the tashmish amita. Aval baha, in our Mishnah, efsher befarnas. In our Mishnah, we have a possibility of bringing in an intermediary to solve the problem. Maybe Rab would agree to Shmuel's position that even in Bistam, we would give you the time to work it out because we have a intermediate solution which will allow you the time to try to figure it out. So Imamodilates, the Shmuel, maybe he'll agree to Shmuel's position. Vietmar Baha, if we only had our position here in our Mishnah, Baha Kamar Shmuel, Mishum Dev Sharbanas. Shmuel says it over here because it's possible to again deal with the situation temporarily through this intermediary. Of Abahai, back in the case of Tashmish Amita, Imamodulay the Rab, maybe to agree to Rab's position, Tzricha. That's the Girsa according to Rashi, that the Tzrichuta, and it's similar to the Girsa in the Gemara back on Samech Aleph, that it only is about Parnas. That through this one Tzrichuta, we could say that Shmuel or Rab would change their position depending on the Mishnah. There was an alternate Girsa, you can see that in the Tosafot. Inami Bahakamar Shmuel deikatsara ditarvayu. But maybe over here, Shmuel agrees or says it because there is a problem for both parties. In the case of Tashmish Amita, both parties are affected by it. Both the man and the woman are affected by it. On the other hand, over here, where when only one party is affected by it, maybe over here there's less compelling reasons to say that we should give you that time or that window to deal with it because you're not as compelled to deal with it. The problem is only from one of the parties, not from both of the parties. So Tosfot says, even though it's unnecessary, because our Gemara sufficiently explained the machloket in both cases through one Tzrichuta, he says, nevertheless, many times the Gemara will bring two sides to its Tzrichuta, even though you could have done it with one side. Like over here, Parnas is sufficient for us to say that we need their opinions both in the Mishnah and Tashmish Amita and here, because each one of them could change their opinion because of Parnas over here. Nevertheless, he says that sometimes the Gemara will bring an additional reason to say why Shmuel might think the case is true in one place and not in the other place. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, Tanan, Amadir tishto, shelo tito mechan mikol perot, yotzi vitein ktuba. Person takes a neder, or takes a neder that doesn't allow his wife to partake of one type of fruit. Yotzi vitein ktuba al-altar, meaning that he divorces her and gives her ktuba immediately. So how do we explain this vis-a-vis our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that we give you time to work this out. We give you time to find a petach l'nidro. Over here it says it's over immediately. Bishlam alarav kan bistam kan bimifarish. So in our Mishnah, what's the difference between the case of echad mikol haperot versus the first case in the Mishnah where he says asur le'enot lo? So Rav will say simply the difference was between whether he explicitly gave a time limit or he didn't give a time limit. In the first case, where it's asur le'enot lo, why do we wait 30 days? It's because he specifically said that the neder would only last for 30 days. So in that case, we give him time, we try to find a petach l'nidro, or we deal with it in that short window. On the other hand, in the case of the isur of echad mikol peirot, he did not specify a time limit, and therefore they get divorced immediately. So for Rav to explain the difference between the first case in our Mishnah and the second and third cases in our Mishnah is very simple. It's the difference between whether he delineated a time frame, he limited the neder, versus the case where he took a neder without any time limit on it. Allah le Shmuel kasho. On the other hand, for Shmuel, it's problematic. Shmuel says that our Mishnah is even in the case of Stam. So why is there a difference between the first case of neder, where it's lehenot lo, versus the second case in the Mishnah, where echad mikol peirot olam, we say give a divorce immediately. Where it says, Chachamai Skinan, Kigon Shinidrahi, Bikiem La Ihu. It's a case where she takes the neder, and he upholds the neder. So, Vikasava Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir, who we are assuming is the author of this position, because it's a Stam Mishnah, and a Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, who notain etzpa ben shina, that he is responsible for the problem now. Because in a case where she takes the neder, and he upholds the neder, we blame him for the problem now because he had a choice to be mefer the neder. The fact that he didn't take up that opportunity to nullify the neder, now he is responsible for the outcome. So in that situation, that's why she gets a divorce. She gets it immediately, and she gets her ktubah. She doesn't lose her ktubah despite the fact that she is the one who took the neder. Rashi explains that because in this case, there's no reason to wait. In the case where the woman took the neder, if she wants to get her ktubah, all she has to do is wait it out, and she'll get her ktubah. So there should be no difference between waiting the 30 days or doing it immediately, because if she so chooses to get her ktubah, all she will do is nothing over the next 30 days, and then she'll be entitled to her ktubah anyway. So we say just give her the get and the ktubah immediately, because she's really the controlling factor over here. So if she decides she doesn't want to unwind the neder, or she doesn't want to find a petach to the neder, she'll get her ktubah either way. And since that's the case, we say that divorce her immediately. Now others point out that that may not be the case. She might have been testing her husband. She might have been trying to figure out what his response would be. And in that situation, the response was that he was not nullifying it. And because he didn't nullify it, maybe she still wants to look for a petach. She doesn't necessarily want to end the marriage here. She was doing this as a test. And the reason being that when people take nidarim, we'll find this when we get to Masechet Nidarim as well, many times it was a response to anger. When a person was very angry, and this was the result of the anger, was that they took it out through a neder. Said, you won't get any hanah from me. You won't get any hanah from me. That was the way they dealt with their anger, or they manifested their anger. So when the husband is angry, and he takes the neder, the woman's hope is that he will cool down. And when he cools down, and he is more level-headed and rational, then he'll look for a petach l'nidro, because he did it while he was angry. The woman, on the other hand, seemingly, according to Rashi, took it in a level-headed manner, trying to test her husband to see if he would react to that. Now, the possibility, and this is what the Rishonim raised about Rashi, is you could have equally have said that the woman was angry when she took the neder, and she was just as angry as her husband, she took the neder, and she might also, after cooler heads prevail, might want to get a petach l'neder. And therefore, why don't we wait the 30 days over here? So that might have to do with the one of two possibilities. Either, as Tosfot over here says, v'nira l'ri, da'ashtalo mayri b'detalinu b'tashmish, ela shenadra ana b'echad mikol b'perot, kozman shi tachtav. It's in a case where she took a neder in terms of one of the perot olam are going to be asurim as long as she is under his auspices. Dimnidra l'olam imkein mar taviach. She always says it forever, then what's the benefit of her divorcing because the neder will still be in place? So she tied the neder to the duration of the marriage, and therefore the termination of the marriage will also terminate the neder. And that's why there's a benefit, or you'll see the altar, because the only way to unwind the neder, or the easy way to unwind the neder, is to get divorced, because she tied the neder to the divorce itself. That's one way to frame it. The other way to frame it is something that we're going to see in the Gemara later on, which is that when he takes the neder, her assumption is that he was angry, and when he cools down, he'll unwind the neder. On the other hand, when she takes the neder, and he upholds the neder, her assumption is that he hates her. And when she assumes that he hates her, she wants out immediately, she doesn't want to wait around. Why? Because he upheld the neder when he was on a rational basis. Even if she took it while she was angry, and she was quiescent, the fact that he upheld the neder is really indicative of how he feels about her. And since he feels that way about her, then she says, I want out immediately, because there's no way that this is going to settle down in a good way. I know that he hates me and I want to leave immediately. So that's why there's a difference between when she takes the neder and when he takes the neder. When she takes the neder, there's no buffer, according to Rashi, because she's in control and she could just hold out to get her ktubah anyway. According to the Ri, because she connected the neder to the marriage. According to others, because of this idea of if he upholds the neder, then it's clear that he hates her and she wants out immediately. Versus the husband, which we assume he took it when he was angry, and therefore we believe that when cooler heads prevail, he will find a petach l'neder, or there's a possibility he will find petach l'neder. And that will be the differentiation here in the Mishnah between when he takes the neder and when she takes the neder. And if you remember, in the Mishnah we also discussed how is it possible to be oser davar that he doesn't have control over. How is he oser peirot olam on her if it's her, she's another party, and he's being osera, third party's fruit, on her. How do we connect those nidarim? So Tosafot already here discusses that issue. We discussed on the Mishnah the possibility that she connected the neder to something else, the Tashmisha Mita or some other thing that he connects or she connects the neder to, which triggers the neder, or the other possibility, like we said here, is that she took the neder. And that's what the Gemara seems to conclude, at least according to Shmuel, is that she took the neder, and therefore she could be oser other fruits, or third-party fruits, because it's her that's involved in this situation. Now, the Gemara asks a question. Sava Rabbi Meir, who notein etzba ben shina? Does the Rabbi Meir really blame the husband in situations where the woman takes the neder and he upholds the neder? Vatanya, don't we have a brayta? Ha'isha shenadra b'nazir, a woman who takes a neder nizirut, v'shama bala, and her husband hears about it, v'lo hefer la, and he does not nullify it. Rabbi Meir, v'Rabbi Yehuda omrim, he natna etzba ben shina. It's her problem. She took the neder, and therefore, fikach imratza bala hafer yafer, the husband has a choice. If he wants to nullify the neder, he so can. V'im amar efshi b'isha nadranit, if he wants to say, listen, I really don't want a woman who takes nidarim, teitzei shelo b'ktubah, he can force her out and say she loses her ktubah because she took the neder. It's her fault that this situation arose. When she's to blame, she loses her ktubah. Despite the fact that he had the ability to unwind it, we don't demand that of him. He actually has the choice over here. Now, Tosafot mentions that later on in the Masechta, we say that a woman loses out her and her ktubah when it's noderet ve'ena mikayemet. That when she takes nidarim and she doesn't keep the nidarim, that's grounds for divorce and grounds for her to lose her ktubah over here. In this instance, when she takes neder nizirut, there's no proof that she's not going to keep the neder. So why should he be able to divorce her without a ktubah? So Tosafot says that's by other nidarim. About nidarim sheyesh behem inui nefesh, nidarim that involve some sort of affliction, change in her appearance or physical stature, in that case, then he can divorce her immediately and say, I'm not interested in a woman who acts in this way. And there are those that even suggest that he can provoke her to take such a neder. Because if she's willing to take a neder and she does take such a neder, he can push her to do that. And in pushing to do so, then he can divorce her and say, I don't want a woman who is a nadranit, a woman who takes nidarim like this. So here he has the right to divorce her because she took such a neder that involves inui nefesh. And even though he had the ability to be mayfair, he had the ability to nullify it, he so chooses not to. Now, there's here a difference in the Rishonim. When we say that he wants to nullify it, he can. If he doesn't, right, then he's mekayemet. How active or passive was he over here? He could be passive and have the neder take effect because he just didn't do anything to nullify it. Other than that, it could be that he actively is mekayem the neder. That'll make a difference in the second half here of the Braitha, which is Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lazar, Omim, who no tenetzva ben shina. It's his fault over here because he had the right to nullify it. And since he didn't, we're going to blame him. The fikach im ratza bala hafer, yafer. If he wants to nullify it, go ahead and nullify it. Vim amar efshi b'isha nedranit. If he says, I don't want a woman who takes nidarim, yotzi b'ten ktubah. He'll divorce her, but she's entitled to ktubah over here because he's to blame. So over here, it makes a difference whether you think he passively allowed it to happen versus actively happened. Some Rishonim believe only if he was mikayim the neder do we blame him for it, because then he actively said the neder and put the neder in place. Then we blame him for it. If he passively did nothing, then we wouldn't blame him. Others say the fact that he had the right to be made fair and he let it go, that's enough to blame him for the situation because he didn't take the opt out. And since he didn't opt out, now it's his problem and therefore we blame him. So now we see from here clearly that Rabbi Meir believes that it's her problem and not his problem. So how can we say in our Mishnah that we blame him for her neder when he's mekayemit? And over here in this bright doll, we're saying Rabbi Meir says we blame her, not him. So where it says, epuch, flip the positions. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Amrim, who notain? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda believe that he is to blame over here, similar to our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lozo, Amrim, he natna. Rabbi Lozo and Rabbi Yossi believe that she is to blame over here, so they flip the positions. But now the Gemara runs into other problems, which is, Visava Rabbi Yossi, he natna. Is it really true that Rabbi Yossi believes that it's her problem, that she's the cause of the issue over here, and therefore she loses her ktubah? That's none. Rabbi Yossi Omer, at the end of our Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi says, B'aniyot, shelo natan kitzva. When it comes to the aniyot, if he doesn't give any time frame, over there he divorces her, v'yitain ktubah, and he gives the ktubah. And our assumption now is that in the latter half of the Mishnah, it's a case where she took the neder, and he upheld the neder. Yet she's still getting her ktubah. That's clear from the Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi believes who's to blame in this case. That's him. He's to blame over here. So how can you say that in the Braita we're going to flip the positions and Rabbi Yossi is going to believe that she's to blame? So Ema, so let's reorganize the positions here. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi Omrim, who notain? So Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, like in our Mishnah, will say he is to blame. And since he is to blame, she gets her ketubah. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar omrim, he natna. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar will be of the opinion that she is to blame in this case. Now the Gemara says, now we're going to run into a problem. Sever Rabbi Yehuda, he natna. Is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda believes that she's to blame? Vatnan. Don't we have our Mishnah that says, Rabbi Yehuda omer, Bisrael yom echad yikayim. Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah that for Yisrael, for one day he keeps her around. After 2 days, he divorces her. And there it says, Yotzi v'ten ketubah. Again, she's entitled to her ketubah, means that he is to blame over here. So, Ema, let's amend the Braita to read this way. Rabbi Meir, v'Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Yossi Omrim, all three of them believe, hu notain. He is to blame in this case, and that's why she's entitled to her ketubah. Like their opinions are seemingly in our Mishnah. Rabbi Lazar will be the lone opinion, homer, hi natna, that she is the one to blame over here, and she's not entitled to her ketubah. V'im tilsim ala Omar, if you want to say, look, amending the Braita to say that the two parties that we thought had this opinion and the two parties we thought had that other opinion are wrong, reorganize them, that's fine. But to say the Braita had 2 versus 2 and now you're changing it to 3 versus 1, that's too big a change. Zuge zuge ktani, that the Braita has pairs that are arguing on each other. Ema, then let it say this way. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, Omrim, hi natna. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar believe that it's her fault and she'll lose her ketuba. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi Omrim, hu notain. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi are found explicitly in our Mishnah who say that she gets her ketubah, will say that he is to blame. But what are you going to do with Rabbi Meir? Because before we said that Rabbi Meir is the author of the position that it's his fault. So when it says, v'astama delok Rabbi Meir, and we'll solve that problem by saying our Stam Mishnah, even though it's a Stam Mishnah, will not be like Rabbi Meir. You assume that the Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir. Don't make that assumption anymore, and then you won't run into a problem with Rabbi Meir's opinion. Now the Gemara moves on and says, V'saver Rabbi Yossi b'aniyot shelo natan kitzva, in the case by the poor women, where he gives no limit to the neder with regards to putting on the perfumes, alma bal matzi mefer. From this you would conclude that the husband has a right in such an instance to nullify the neder. Because what Rabbi Yossi says over there, when she takes the neder, and then he upholds the neder, then he is to blame in that situation in our Mishnah. So now if that's the case, that means that he had the option to nullify it. If he doesn't have the option to nullify it, how can you blame him for the neder? And why would she get her ketubah? So it must be that he has the right to nullify such nidarim. Why does the husband have such a right? V'riminu, we have a question. There's a Mishnah, the last Mishnah in nidarim says, Elu dvarim shabal mefer. These are items which the husband has the right to nullify. Dvarim sheish ben inui nefesh. Items that have afflictions of the individual associated with them. Im erchatz, im lo erchatz. I will bathe, I will not bathe. Im et kashet, I will adorn myself, I will put on perfume. Im lo et kashet, or I will not put on perfume. Am Rabbi Yossi, ein elu nidre inui nefesh. Rabbi Yossi says those aren't considered to be nidarim of inui nefesh. That means that Rabbi Yossi believes the husband does not have a right to mayfair, to nullify such nidarim. He says, et kashet and lo et kashet have no bearing on their relationship in terms of inui nefesh. He believes, as Tosafot says over here, that bathing and kishut are not things that are considered to be inui nefesh. If she doesn't bathe, she doesn't adorn herself in perfume, those are not grounds or those are not inui nefesh in these cases. The Rashi over here explains how these formulations work, because over there it says whether it's a neder, whether it's a shvuah. Shvuah, you can take on a action, like erchatz and lo erchatz. The shvuah can be chal on an intangible item. Nedarim are always chal on the tangible item. So then, you can write it, and Rashi points this out, you can be hanatz rechitza alai, that the benefit of rechitza, I make asur to myself, and that's how you can formulate it in terms of a neder versus a shvuah. And then he also explains how you can formulate it in the positive and the negative. Meaning that Nidarim, she says, Ser Hanatu Chitzalai, Im Erchatz. If I do bathe, then I will have an Isur of Hanatu Chitzalai on myself. And the Shvuah is Im Lo Erchatz. So he's explaining to you how these two Lashonot work in the Braita over there. But what's obvious from here is that Rabbi Yossi doesn't think the husband is empowered to nullify such a Nezder of It Kashet. Our Mishnah is a case where he takes a neder that she cannot be mitkashetet over time. If that's the case, where we set up the Mishnah as being a case where she took the neder and he upheld the neder and we're blaming him for that, that means that he had a right to be Mayfair. But Rabbi Yossi says he doesn't have a right to Mayfair. How do we reconcile between our Mishnah here and the Mishnah in Nedarim? Now over here, there's a little problem with the Girsa. The Girsa in our Gemara is Ve'eluhei Nidrei Inui Nefesh. This is what's considered to be a neder of Inui Nefesh. If you look in the Mishnayot in Nedarim, then it's the beginning of the next Mishnah, and it says over there, that's the continuation of Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Rabbi Yossi says, that which you said before, Rechitza and Kshita, those are not Nidre Inui Nefesh. I'll tell you what a Nidre Inui Nefesh is. Konam Alai Kopei Rocha Bolam. She takes a neder that she has asur ba'ana, any fruits in the world. That's a neder of Inui Nefesh. That's the way that the Mishnah continues in Masechet Nedarim. Over here, we all of a sudden have something else. Ve'elein nidre inui nefesh, shlo echel basar, shlo shtei yayin, shlo et kashet bebigdei tzivonim. Says that, I will not eat meat, I will not drink wine, I will not wear colored clothing. So as Rashi says over here, it's gnai ubizayon hula amid ganei alav. These are things that make her minuval, disgusting, and a bizayon, and it'll be embarrassing. Now, what will that cause? That might cause her either to violate the nether, that's one possibility, or it's untenable for him in this situation. Since it's untenable for him in this situation, therefore he has a right of hafara. So Tosfos speculates maybe this is a braita, and in the end he says he doesn't think it's right at all, and he thinks the girsa and the gemara is incorrect over here, and that which is written over here cannot be explained that these are the positions of Rabbi Yossi, that it's inoy nefesh, and therefore he just says that we should be goresed like it is in the Gemara in Nidarim, or you have to eliminate the words Eluhein Nidrei Inui Nefesh, which is the continuation of that Mishnah, because what we read afterwards is not definitions or examples of Inui Nefesh for Rabbi Yossi. So just to know that Tosfot eliminates what we just read in the Gemara, because it does not follow that Mishnayot that we find in Nidarim. Now the Gemara says, Achamai Skinyan, Bidvarim Shebeino Lebeina. We're dealing with things that are between the couple. That is that the husband has a right of hafara in two instances. One is an instance of inui nefesh, something that's an affliction to her, something that would be disgusting and untenable. And the other is it has something that has to do with their relationship. The yachasim, the relationship between them, usually focused on the yachasim of tashmisha mita, that's something that gets in the way of their intimacy. So now what the Gemara says here, it also makes the same diuk in the Gemara in Nidarim, which is, Rabbi Yossi says, Ein elu nidre inui nefesh. These are not Nidarim of inui nefesh, but they are Nidarim of beino levena. So even though they are not classified as inui nefesh, that he can still nullify them because they are issues of beino levena, between him and her. These are things that might ruin their intimacy. And since it might ruin the intimacy, he has a right of hafara. Now, why does it matter if he can be Mayfair because of Inu Nefesh, or if he can be Mayfair because of Beino Lebeina? The difference is, how does the nullification work? In a case of Inu Nefesh, when he nullifies the Neder, it eliminates the Neder completely. That means both for him and any other party in the world. The Neder is nullified completely. In cases of Beino Lebeina, his nullification only works for their relationship. His nullification, it nullifies the Neder with regards to their relationship, to their interactions. But the neder will stay in place for other parties or for any other individual. All right, so that's the difference between inui nefesh and beino lebeina. And that's what the Gemara now says, that we're dealing with dvarim shebeino lebeina. Now, this girsa that we have in the Gemara now continues with the girsa of Rashi, and it's not so simple, and therefore Rashi has to reinterpret things a little bit. Well, I'll discuss with you Tosafot's girsa, which matches up with the Gemara in Nidarim. We have the exact same Gemara in Nidarim, and over there, Tosafot basically lifts that Gemara out and brings it over here and explains it according to that Gemara in Nidarim. So Rashi says, Anicha l'man d'amar dvarim shebeino lebeina, bal mefer. That works well according to the one who says that when you have issues between beino lebeina, the husband's allowed to be mefer. Ela l'man d'amar ina bal mefer. According to the one who says the husband cannot nullify things that are beino lebeina, ma'ika l'meimar. Then what can you say over here? The difficulty with this is that that's a pasuk in the Torah. It says, ben ish l'ishto. The pasuk says that a husband is allowed to be mayfair dvarim shebeino lebeina. There is nobody of the opinion that you can't be mayfair dvarim shebeino lebeina. From our Gemara, it sounds like there's one opinion that says you can, and one opinion that says you can't. which is just not true. Both opinions believe that you can say Bein Ol LeBeina, you can be Mayfair. Their arguments within the position of Rabbi Yossi, whether these are considered to be Bein Ol LeBeina or they're not considered to be Bein Ol LeBeina. But everybody agrees that it can be Bein Ol LeBeina. So Deidmar, Dvarim Shebein Ol LeBeina, when you have things that are between them or their intimacy or their relationship, Ravuna Amar Abal Mayfair, that the husband has the right to nullify them. Rav Adar Bar Abba Amar in a Bal Mayfair, that the husband does not have a right to be Mayfair. So the way our Gemara reads, it sounds like this is a general machloket about Bein Ol LeBeina, not particularly within the position of Rabbi Yossi. Shlo Matzinu Shu'al Shemeid Ba'afar Pior. We never find a fox that dies in its own hole, or can't handle the hole that he dug, he won't fall into. The same thing over here. The husband who has a relationship with this woman, an ongoing relationship with the woman, if one of these things happen, he'll deal with it. He'll manage the situation because he's already had intimacy with her over a long period of time. And therefore, if there's some slight difference over here, he'll be able to deal with it. So now, the way that Rashi explains the Gemara and the way that it's written here, he says that the Gemara now moves to a new conclusion, which is Hachamai Iskin. And what's the case here? B'dvarim shebeino lebeina. We're talking about a different issue, which is, as you can see in Rashi, Sam Hamishir Tesear. It's a case where she does not use depilatory. So the case here now changes completely. The word kishut no longer is about adorning with perfume, but rather the word kishut over here means depilatory, removing her pubic hair, which was considered to be something of importance in their day. And if she didn't do such a thing, it might be grounds for divorce. So now, does that consider to be Dvarim Shebeino Lebeina? And therefore, Rashi reads the continuation of the Gemara as a question as to whether that's considered to be Bein Ol LeBeina, this issue of the depilatory. And that's how Rashi reads the continuation of the Gemara, the whole machloket here, and everything is focused on this issue of this one particular item. Is that considered to be an item that's Bein Ol LeBeina? Ravuna says, Abal Mayfair, yes, that is considered to be Bein Ol LeBeina. And Rav Adar Bar Abba says that the husband cannot be Mayfair it because it's not considered Bein Ol LeBeina, as he expresses over here. They've had tashmish for many years, possibly over here. And now that she didn't use the depilatory, it's not going to affect their ability to have relations over here. Again, the Gemara in other places discusses what's the issue in terms of not removing the pubic hair and what dangers might lie in that. But they basically say that his intimacy with his wife, which has already progressed for many years, will not be affected by this. And therefore, Rashi reinterprets the word kishut over here in order to facilitate the reading of the Gemara in such a manner. On the other hand, Tosafot basically follows the Gemara in Nidarim, and Tosafot says this Hachamai Eskinan is not relevant over here, but we skip right to the issue of the Diuk in Rav Yossi's position, which is that Diuk in Rav Yossi's position is Nidrein in Nefesh, you can't be made for them for, but you can be made for them from Bein Ol LeBeina. Then they jump to the machloket of Rav Huna and Rav Adar Bar Abba, who argue within the position of Rabbi Yossi, is this considered to be Bein Ol LeBeina for Rabbi Yossi? Now, in the Gemara Nidarim, the positions are reversed, and you can see that in Tosfot as well. He says, Rav Adar Bar Abba says Mayfair, and Rav Huna says Ein Habal Mayfair. So then the Gemara moves on after that, which is, according to the one who says that Devarim Shebeino LeBeina Baal is not Mayfair, how do we solve the problem here? And then the Gemara continues here, Hakob Mayaskinan. So that's the two ways to read the Gemara. One according to Rashi, which follows what we have in our Gemara now, and says that the whole issue switched to Kishut, which was the depilatory. On the other hand, Tosafot just matches the Gemara in Nidarim, the Gersa in the Gemara in Nidarim, which says that the machloket here is when Rabbi Yossi said this is not Inu Nefesh, does that then drop it down to Bein Ol LeBeina automatically? And that's a machloket between Rav Adar Bar Abba and Rav Huna, again, in reverse of their positions here. It's the reverse in the Darim, their positions. And so Tosafot reads it that way. And then the question is brought afterwards. And now what do we do about it? So my answer is, what's the case here? They're connected between the adornment and Tashmish Hamita. Now, according to Rashi, it's not clear from Rashi, but seemingly it's the same Kishut that he was speaking about before, which was the depilatory. On the other hand, for Tosafot, the Kishute here is the regular Kishut, adornment, wearing perfume. So she connects the wearing of perfume to Tashmish Hamita. Tashmish Hamita is clearly a Davar Shebeino Leveina. So therefore now her neder has a trigger in it that will involve Beino Lebeina. Damra, because she says, Ya'aser hanat tashmishcha alai, your tashmish will be asur to me, imet kashet, if I adorn myself, or according to Rashi, if I use the depilatory. Kedamar Rabkano, as Rabkano says, Damar Rabkano, hanat tashmishi alecha, if she says that my hana of tashmish is asur to you, the woman tries to be oser the husband in tashmish by saying that you may not get hana of tashmish from me, kofa umisham shato, he can force her to have bi'ah with her, because the neder is not chal at all. She does not have a right to stop him from having tashmish with her, because she is mishubedet lo. That's one of the agreements in marriage, is that she will provide that for her husband. She can't come along and make a neder to eliminate it. On the other hand, if it says, hanat tashmishcha alai, if she says it in this way, the hano of your tashmish on me is asur, then as far as he's concerned, she didn't oser anything. Because he can have bi'ah with her, she didn't oser anything to him. She made the isur vis-a-vis herself, and says, hanav, your tashmish is asur to me. Then we say, yafer. He has to nullify it. Because we don't feed somebody something that is asur. So in this case, if she said it in a phrase that in a manner which says, hanav, your tashmish to me is problematic, then enoch hanami, he can force her to have tashmish again, because she's mishubedet lo. But on the other hand, in this case, if we go ahead and have tashmish, we're giving her something that is asur. He is asur to her. How do we solve the problem? Nullify the nether. He should nullify the nether in order to prevent that problem. So now, in this case, where she takes the nether, yes, sarah not tashmish chalai imet kashet, in that case, he should be mayfair the nether, because it's dvarim shebeino lebeina, like Rav Kahana says. In this case, we don't want her to end up with him having tashmish with her, because he has the right to do so, but we're going to be feeding her something asur. So in order to do that, he should mayfair the nether. If he's not mayfair the nether, we're going to blame him for the problem. So Gemara says, I have a simple solution. Velo tit kashet, velo te'aser. Just don't trigger the nether. Don't be adorned. And then you won't trigger the Isra of Tashmish. So why don't we just tell her, go ahead, the nether is chal, just don't trigger the nether. Gemara says, imkein karula menuvelet, because then they're going to call her disgusting. So the way Rashi reads it over here, which is that if she's a nuvelet, v'chi mavazu mikashto, when they denigrate her, when they make fun of her that she is not adorning, or in the case where she's not using a depilatory, then she's going to violate the nether, because she wants to react to this denigration, this embarrassment that it's causing her, she's going to react to it. So by definition, she's going to be mitkashet. We can assume that she's going to be mitkashet, and since she's going to be mitkashet, then the nether is going to be triggered. I say don't be mitkashet, she won't be able to withstand the social pressure of acting in this manner, which will make her disgusting, and therefore we say that she will trigger the neder. And that's why he can be mayfared, because of dvarim shebeino leveina. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that because she will be a minuvelet, therefore it becomes an issue of beino leveina. Not because that will trigger her to be mitkashet, and therefore put the neder into play, but rather because once she becomes minuvelet, now it changes from being a neder that is not beino leveina, to a neder that is beino leveina, and then it has relevance to him. So Gemara says, okay, let's do it this way. V'tit kashet, v'te'aser. Let her adorn herself. Let her trigger the neder. And then be oser herself in tashmish. Now we saw earlier in the Mishnayot, in the Masechta, that when he takes a neder to be oser her b'tashmish, either Beit Shammai Shtei Shabbatot, we give him 2 weeks to work it out to get a petach l'neder. Either Beit Hillel Shabbat Achad. For Beit Hillel, we give him a week to work it out. So why not say the same thing over here? Why in our Mishnah, when it talks about Kishut, does it say immediately she gets a divorce and a ketubah? Why is it immediate? Why don't we have the same buffer of time as a week or 2 weeks that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel already stipulated back there with regards to Tashmish? Mar says, Hani milehechi da'adra'ihu, because that's a case where he took the neder, the savra, because what does she think in that case? Mirtach ratach hilavai. Because over there, she will think, he's angry at me. V'hashta motiv date. Now he'll settle down. Cooler heads will prevail. And therefore he'll find a petach the nether. That's why we give him a week or 2 weeks, depending if it's Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, in order to rectify the situation. Because she doesn't want to out immediately. She thinks it was a momentary problem that he took the nether. And now he's going to rectify that problem by finding a petach the nether. Say, I really wasn't thinking about this, I was just angry, I didn't mean to take the nether, we'll figure out a way to get out of the nether. Avahocha de Nadra'i, in the case where she precipitated the nether, she's the one who took it, Vishatik la, and now he's silent, again, whether that means he was silent or he is mikayemet, Savra mit ishtech misna husani li. Because he was silent or he was mikayem the nether here, it's clear he hates me and she wants out immediately. She doesn't want to stick around to find out that he hates her. She knows now that he hates her and she wants out immediately. So in the case where he did it out of emotion, then she says, listen, I can live with him because he'll figure out a way once he calms down to deal with the situation and everything will be okay. He didn't really hate me. He didn't take the nether because he hate me. It's because he was very emotional at that time that he took the nether. Over here, where she's the one taking the nether, and he's the one being mikayem it, what are we talking about emotions from his side over here? He's not emotional. He's just letting it go. He could have been made for the nether. The fact that he didn't is clear proof of the fact that he dislikes me. Since he dislikes me, I want out immediately. I don't want to stick around with a husband who doesn't like me. And that's why the outcome will be different in these two situations. The Tosfot over here asks about the fact that before, when we put the kishut connected to Tashmish HaMitah, that's why we ran into a problem of the 1 week or the 2 weeks. He says, why didn't the Gemara just answer this way, which is, if I'm mitkashet, I am oser hanat perot olam alai. Everybody over there agrees that that has no duration to it, and she has to get divorced immediately, and she will get her ketubah. So why did the Gemara put the taluy or the tliyah with tashmisha mitah and not put it with some other nether that would automatically trigger, and then you would skip a step in the Gemara of having to ask, oh, what about Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel? They give you a week or 2 weeks by tashmisha mitah. Just use a nether, which is Yisur Peroch Bolam, which nobody thinks you have any duration. You divorce immediately in that situation. So Gatosvan answers, v'nir l'rashba, shum dekati abakashule didkashay v'teaser l'Rabbi Yehuda yom echad. Because they still would say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can wait 1 day and type such a type of nether. And so you'd have the same question. It wouldn't be for a week or 2 weeks, it'd be for a day or 2 days. But the same question would arise. Other Rishonim suggest that the Gemara could have, Enochanami, the Gemara could have gone that derech. It didn't go that derech because it wanted to develop the idea of the difference between her and him taking a nether. In addition, the Tosfot asks about the fact that why can't we say we should wait over here because you can find a petach to the hakama. Gemara Nidarim says that after a husband is making the neder, that you can also do, you can unwind the hakama. Just like you can unwind a neder and finding a petach the neder, the hakamata neder for the husband is also can be unwound by a petach the hakama. So why don't we also give him time here to unwind the affirmation of the neder? So Tosafot differentiates and says when it comes to hakamata neder, you can only find a petach on that day. On the day that the Hakamah was done, if you find a petach, that's fine. If not, then you can't, after that time, try to find a petach to the Hakamah. Petach and neder can be found over a duration of time. It doesn't have to be immediately. Even if it's later on, you can find the petach and the neder. But a petach lachamah has to be done on that day itself. In the other instance, Tosfot says that even if you want to say that you could get a petach lachamah even over a longer duration, lo tikhu chachamim shetamin hol v'kashalah. Chachamim didn't allow him to wait around because it's untenable for her in this situation. Once she thinks her husband hates her, she's not going to want to stick around to figure out if he can find a petach to undo the hakama. The mere fact that he was making the nether is enough to give her this feeling of uneasiness or hatred, and therefore she wants out immediately. And Chachamim didn't compel her to stay in until he finds a petach the hakama, and that's why they divorce immediately. Rabbi Yossi Omer Baniyot Shalom Natan Kitzva, when it comes to the poor women, if he didn't limit the nether at all, then she gets divorced and a ketubah. The kama kitzvah. What is considered to be a time limit? I mean that, if say he says for 100 years, is that a time limit on it? When he says it's unlimited, then any limit would be not unlimited. Samra yudam ha-shmol yud bet chodesh. 12 months is considered to be okay. I mean that's considered to be a limit that is feasible or tenable. Rabba barachana amar Rabbi Yochanan eser shanim. 10 years is considered to be a limit that is tenable. Rav Chista amar Rav Yime regel. One regel is considered to be a kitzvah. Shekein b'not Yisrael mitkashtot b'regel. Because the women in general, when it comes to the regel, they get adorned, they put on new clothing, they put on their perfume. So the poor women, at minimum, get their perfumes or put on their besamim at least 3 times a year at every regel. So if he limited it to the regel or up to one regel, that's fine because she wouldn't have been mitkashetet anyway. But if he already crosses over one of those thresholds, then he's beyond the point of what's considered to be normal for a poor woman to be mitkashetet. Another case, bashirot, and the rich women, lamed yom, it's 30 days. Maishna lamed yom, why is 30 days relevant? Because important women benefit from their kishutim for 30 days. Meaning that a woman who gets perfumed up and has the bisamim, that smell or that fragrance lasts for 30 days. Since it lasts for 30 days, if he takes a neder for 30 days, she will still have the residual of her previous adornment. So therefore she can live with that and then put on the new one after the 30 days elapse. Now it's a little bit of an assumption over here that he did at the beginning of a 30-day period and then it's going to end. If she was already 29 days into a last kishut, then it would actually be more time. But the assumption is that 30 days is a normal window for kishut, and therefore if he blocks it for 30 days, it's fine. If he blocks it for more than 30 days, then it becomes problematic. Some suggest over here that isha chashuva, the reason that her b'samim or kishut lasts longer is because she doesn't work. She has maidservants that are helping her out. And so since she does not work or she doesn't perspire because she's not involved in heavy work, therefore her kishutim lasts longer. And that's why it lasts for 30 days, and that's why the Gemara specifically mentions isha chashuva, as opposed to a regular woman who, even if she put on a perfume and maybe she was better off than a poor woman, nevertheless her perfume may not last 30 days. Or you can say isha chashuva is any woman who has the means by which to do this. And it could be anybody who's not an aniya, anyone who's not a poor woman could explain it either of those two ways. Okay, next Mishnah. Amadirat ishto shelo telech lebeit aviyah. Takes a neder that his wife may not return to her father's house. B'mazman shuhima ba'ir, if he is together with her in the city, chodesh echad yikayim, he can keep around for 1 month, shnayim yotzi v'ten ktubah. If it's for 2 months, then already he has to divorce her and give her a ktubah. In the case where they're in the same city, meaning that the husband and the father are in the same city, then the duration where we try to work it out or try to get a petach the neder is for a month. Once we hit 2 months, then we divorce. But bizman sheyar acheret, if they're in different cities, regular chad yikayim, for one regular he'll keep her around to see if they can figure a solution to the problem. Shlosha yotzi v'ten ktubah. By the third one, he has to divorce her and give a ktubah. The obvious question which the Gemara will take up is, if you have 1 and 3, what happens at 2 regalim, the in-between stage? Amadirat ishto, person who takes a neder with regards to his wife, shalol telech lebeit ha'evel, that she may not attend a mourner's house. Ol lebeit ha'mishteh, she may not attend weddings. Yotzi v'ten ktubah. Give a divorce her immediately and give her a ktubah. Mipnei shnoel b'faneha, because he locks her up, meaning that he prevents her from social interactions, which will give her a sense of normalcy. And because of that, she can divorce immediately and get her ktubah. The Gemara will explain all of this. V'maya toein mishum davar acher. If he makes a claim that there's another problem here, and that's why he's taking the nether, Rashai, then he is permissible. Again, the Gemara will do that in tomorrow's daf. With regards to whether there's promiscuity or there are problems in these situations, then there might be justification for the nether. It's not just a vindictive or nether that's trying to control her life in such a way which is not reasonable. Amarla, Amanat, Shitamri, Leploni, Masha Martali. If she says to her, Yuma can say to so-and-so, this, what you told me, and obviously it's something that's private or something that she should not be disclosing to other parties. Oh, Masha Marti Lach, or what I said to you. Oh, Shate Me Mala'a Ome Ara Lashpa. She should fill up things and dump them into the garbage. Things that, again, have no value and make her look like a fool or crazy. Yotzi V'ten Ktubah. In all these cases, then they get divorced because he's asking her to act in a manner that is not proper or not reasonable. And he can't make those demands of the woman. The woman has independent stature that he cannot just quash in these nidarim. He can't treat her any way he wants. She's a person and she has to be treated like a person. If he's not treating her like a person, make her look crazy, make her do certain things, she can sue for divorce right away and get her ketubah. Mar says, Agufakasha, as we noted in the Mishnah, you have a problem. Mar, it's regular achad yikayim. Keep around for one regal. Hashnaim yotzi v'ten ktubah. If it's 2 regalim, from that you would infer that you divorce immediately. Ema seifa. But then afterwards it says shlosha yotzi v'ten ktubah. In the third, he yotzi v'ten ktubah. He divorces her and gives her a ktubah. Hashnaim k'yikayim. That means for 2 regalim, he will keep her around. The two cases not defined by the Mishnah. The Mishnah dealt with 1 regal where he can keep her around, and 3 regalim where he can't keep her around. What about the case of 2? So what you would midayek from each case the other way around. By the case of you can keep her for 1, 2 would be not. The other case we say three is divorced, then two would be yes. So Amar Abaye is Seifa Atan the Kohenet. The Seifa is a case of Kohenet, again, a woman married to a Kohen, where we give more time to deal with the situation. As we said before, like Rabbi Huda in other cases, we give the woman more time to work it out, because once the divorce goes through, it'll be impossible for them to get remarried, because he can't be Machzir Grushato. So the case of three regalim is for a Kohen with his wife, and the case of one regal is the case of Yisrael with his wife. So in the case of Yisrael, he'll get one regal to figure it out, but the second regal, he's got to get divorced. Kohen will give him two regalim to figure out, but the third regal, he'll have to get divorced. Rabbi Yehudahi. And it's according to Rabbi Yehuda's positions, we saw before that Abaye, on the top of the Amud today, said the same thing in Rabbi Yehuda's position. How is Rabbi Yehuda different than the Tanakama? Exactly in this situation. On the other hand, Rabba Barula Amar Lokasha, Kan Berudufa, Kan Beshein Rudufa. The way Rashi reads it is, this is a woman who runs back home versus a woman who doesn't run back home. A woman who frequents her father's house and goes back a lot, then one regal is tenable, two regalim is not tenable. On the other hand, if this is a woman who's not so compelled to go back to her father's house, she doesn't run back so often, then two regalim is reasonable, a third regal is not reasonable. So the way Rashi learns it, it has to do with the nature of the woman herself. If she's a woman who loves her parents and wants to run back to her all the time, then you give the shorter window. If it's a woman who's not so compelled to go back to her parents' house, then you give a longer window to deal with the situation. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosfot over here quotes from Rabbeinu Hananel. Most of the Rishonim take up that position of the Rabbeinu Hananel and say that the Gemara makes more sense that way, because then the upcoming part of the Gemara matches or is connected to this Gemara. For Rashi, it's disconnected. The next part of the Gemara is disconnected. And you can see that in Rashi, Rashi wipes out in the Girsa, Dichtiv, because it says. Because for Rashi, the next part of the Gemara is not connected to the first part of the Gemara. On the other hand, the way Rabbeinu Hananel explains it, the next part of the Gemara is connected, and that is, the Rabbeinu Hananel doesn't say Rudufa, Shein Rudufa is the nature of the woman, but rather, the context of their marriage. Normally, women, on the first regel, after they get married, go back to their parents' house. So it depends where we're standing in their marriage. If they're in their marriage before the first regel, then if he takes the neder, one regel is enough. That's too much already, because she normally would go back on the first regel. On the other hand, in a case where the marriage is already past the first regel, and then in that case, the woman will not be as rushed to go back to her parents' house, because if she hasn't gone back already, then she doesn't feel so compelled to go. Or if she did feel compelled to go, she already went on the first regel. And therefore, when he takes the neder, makes the difference here. Redufa means he took the neder before the first regel. And Shein Redufa is when he took the neder after the first regel, after that regel where she would normally go home. Now, whether she went home or not does not make such a difference. If she went home already and told her parents, then maybe the second and third regel would not matter at all. But here's the case, maybe she'd even go back in the first regel. But since she opted out of going back to the first regel when normal women would go back, and he takes the neder after the first regel, then by the second and third regel, we give him more time because she's less likely to go back home so immediately. And therefore, we give him more window of time to work out the situation. And then the Gemara would continue now, dichtiv, because it says, az hayiti beinav kimotzeit shalom, then I was in his eyes like I found shalom, amar Rabbi Yochanan, ki kalash nimtzeit shlema bebeit chamiya. This is like a daughter-in-law who is found shlema, to be found whole or accepted within her in-law's house. In their day, the woman moved to the family of the in-laws, and now she finds herself accepted in the in-law house. So what does she want to do when she finds out it went well and things are working out? She wants to run home to tell her parents that things worked out. This is a great marriage. Everything's okay. So now, Vaya, Bayomahu, Noom Hashem, Tikri, Ishi, Velo Tikri Li, Od Bali. This is in the Nevuah of Hosea, where he says that there will be a day when you will call me your husband and not Bali. And as Rashi notes over here, there's a difference between Ishi, Lashon, Ishut, Vinisuin, which is, I would call it, a relationship of parity in some sorts, versus Bali, which is a relationship of commanding, controlling, or more of an imposition, where there's a higher standing husband and a woman who is like an Adon and an Eved, but like a Baal, a master over the woman. So there will be a day when you will call our relationship will be on equal level, equal footing, versus the case when it is on unequal footing. And that is Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kikala b'beit chamia, v'lo kikala b'beit avia. That's when the kala is so settled in her in-law's house that she feels comfortable there the same way that she feels comfortable in her parents' house, meaning that she's not going to run back. So now the way that Rabbeinu Chananel says is that Rabbi Yochanan and these drashot explain that why does the woman run back in the first regel? Because that's the case where she just finds out that she is accepted in her in-law's house. And then she wants to run back to her home and tell her parents about the exciting news. Once she's already been there and finds a comfort level of parity, she's not going to run back to her parents' house because she's so comfortable in her Beit Chamia that she doesn't need to run back anymore. She is settled there, and that's when she is considered to be Ishi and not Baali. So according to the way Tosafot reads and brings Rabbeinu Chananel, this is an explanation for why one woman is a Redufa and one Shalom Redufa, because it has to do with time periods. The first regal, she's Redufa, because she's coming to tell her exciting news that she was accepted in the family. By the second and third regal, she's already settled in Beit Chamia. She's so settled that she doesn't need to run home anymore to tell the news. She feels that comfort there as if she was in her father's house. On the other hand, for Rashi, this is a completely independent agadata, nothing to do with the previous statement, because Rudufa, Shein Rudufa, is the nature of a woman. And the nature of a woman, some women like to run back to their parents' house, some women don't. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is not coming to explain who is who, it's just explaining to you why would they want to go back and why would they not want to go back, but it has nothing to do with the nature of women. And therefore, Rashi eliminates from the Girsa, Dichtiv Lo Garsina, because this is not a continuation of the previous Gemara. Now it continues. Amadira tishto. Bishlam al beit amishteh. I understand why when he takes a neder to disallow her from attending smachot, ikanoel b'fana. Then he's closing down her social life, her social interactions. And that's why we would not allow the marriage to continue or say that she can get divorced and get her ktubah. The beit avel, my noel b'fana ika. What? He doesn't allow her to go to the mourner's house? What's the big deal? She doesn't go to the mourner's house. It's not a social interaction. What lack of social interaction is there then? Tana. The machar he meta, because what's going to happen is the next day she's going to die, vein kol b'riya sovda, and nobody's going to come to eulogize her, because it is a quid pro quo. You would go and eulogize others, then people will come and eulogize you. V'ikadar mein kol b'riya sofna. Nobody will bury her. Meaning that if she doesn't go and attend funerals and bury others, no one will bury her. So what you know b'fanah here is the fact that there's some sort of quid pro quo in the social fabric of society, which is that people attend funerals because others will attend your funeral. If this person never attends anybody else's funerals or never goes to the Beit Avel, nobody will do the same for them. And therefore, that's what the Noel B'fanai is. Tanya, Rabbi Yemei Omer, my dichtiv, what is it meant in the Pasuk? Tov elechet al Beit Avel, melechet el Beit Mishteh. It's better to go to the house of the mourner than to go to the house of the parting. Basher hu sof kol adam. Because that's the end of man's life. V'chayit en alibo. And a person who's alive and goes to see this will take note of this. So the pashtut of the pasuk is, if you want to get musar, you go to the Beit Avel, because then you see the end of life, you see that people are mortal, mortal beings, in the end you're going to have to deal with your mortality. So in dealing with your mortality, v'chayit en libo, that will awaken within you certain feelings or certain uneasiness that will make you do better or act better. So that's why you go to the Beit Avel. Beit HaMishteh does not compel you in that way. Beit HaMishteh is an open, happy, happening place, which does not compel the individual to be introspective in those cases. So that would be the Pashtut Pasuk. But Rabbi Meir says, "May v'chai yiten alibo, dvarim shel mita." What does it mean that the person will take note or take to heart what's happening here? That is issues of death. De safed, yis bidune. If you eulogize others, they will eulogize you. De kavar, yikrune. If you bury others, they will bury you. Di dao, yidlune. If you cry and call out, others will cry and call out for you. Dilavai, if you accompany the mate, halvayata mate, then yilavune. Others will accompany you when you pass away. Ditaan, the one who carries the mita or is a coffin bearer, then itanune. Others will bear his coffin. So the way Rabbi Meir learns it, and this is an interesting dynamic over here, which is that there is a quid pro quo. If you do these items for others, then you will get this done for you. So it's worthwhile to attend the Beit HaEvel, even though it's uncomfortable, even though it's not necessarily the place you want to be. It's worth attending because you want the same done for you. In return, you want this in the end. It's interesting only because we always note in these types of situations that dealing with the mate is a chesed shel emet. That a person does such a chesed, they don't expect anything back. The way Rabbi Meir is defining it is, yes, it's a chesed shel emet vis-a-vis that particular person, which is that person can never repay you because they've already passed away. On the other hand, it's not a chesed shel emet in the social context, which is that you, if you do this, you expect to get the same back for yourself, not from this particular individual, but from society at large. That if you act in this way, then others will act the same or similar for you. And that's why Achayitel Yibo. Make sure that you go to the Beit Evel and take note of this and do all of these things, because that way you'll be ensured that others will do the same for you. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Bet Omid Aleph.